Dear listeners, this podcast is created by the Linguistov team.
Order a free English lesson with us at www.linguistov.ru.
And if you want to share your opinion and ideas regarding our discussions, you can email us at info@linguistov.ru.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm alright. Thank you. You?
So, what's the plan for New Year?
My aunt is coming over from Bashkortostan.
So,
We're planning to, just to hang out. Maybe go skiing. So, just going to prepare some very common Russian dishes. Some very interesting, funny salads. And, typical, a lot of mayo. Very unhealthy.
Yeah, did I tell you I had a friend from the United States?
Oh, yeah.
His name is Chris, and he visited Russia when I was, 17 for the first time, and he fell totally in love with it. And then he went there every summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then on his second, when I was in California, and he was in Russia at that time, and that was his second visit to Russia. And when he came back, and I was like, "So, how was it? How was your trip? What new things about Russia did you learn?" And he was like, "Well, a tomato, a cucumber, and lots of mayo. That's the Russian salad."
That's true.
What do you think about the Olympic Games in Sochi? I have a friend who lives in Sochi, and she says that they up there hate this Olympic Games.
Sure.
Because they have to stay without electricity because of the construction going on. They have to stay without electricity for weeks without any explanation. They can just turn off the electricity and that's it, you know. Or now they have this law, if you do not have propiska or registration, you're actually risking to be deported from Sochi if you do not have any ticket for the game. My friend, she doesn't have any propiska, any registration, so they had to buy a ticket for the for the hockey, so that in case police stops them, they have the reason why they're there. And another thing is, she told me that again, if your car, you have a car, and your car is not registered in the region of what is it, Krasnodar, whatever, so you also do not have the right to drive your car in Sochi because there are already too many cars. And she says that there are lots of stupid, extremely stupid laws, and
if they did the same in London.
Don't know. And the people who live in Sochi hate the games preparation, and they say that it's all about corruption, a lot of illegal things going on and things like that. So, and they said that people who do not live there only see the top of the iceberg. They think that it's cool, that, you know, but in reality, it is all very much different. Okay.
So, yeah, quite a lot of people to buy presents for.
Really?
Since some relatives of mine came.
Well, it's not fair. They came. They were out of the plan. So you should have told them. I'm sorry, guys. No presents for you.
Yeah.
Have they already come?
Yeah.
Did they bring presents with themselves?
They did, yes. I have a fantastic bag. It's a rucksack.
A rucksack. Backpack.
Yeah.
Well, they say rucksack as well. I know.
Really?
Yeah.
I said that it was a rucksack.
I don't know, but I also thought that it's rucksack. Rucksack.
Oh, like, okay. Well, I think that your version is more authentic.
Yep.
Yes.
But they do use it. But backpack is more common, I guess.
So yeah, I have a fantastic backpack. I will show you the picture.
Sure.
It's made in shape of a horse.
In the shape of a horse. My God. Yeah. Isn't it metaphoric when your horse is on your back?
That's right.
While it's supposed to be vice versa.
Maybe there is some meaning behind it.
Something like, do not exhaust horses.
Yes. So it's sort of a Greenpeace message. Not paying a bit of attention to the coming new year, not noticing the festive mood of people around, forgetting about the presents and new year trees, she thinks only about English. She's our linguistic Santa Claus that brings us joy of knowledge. It is Aisha!
Oh! Then, so the second part was about you, about the linguistic Santa Claus.
I'm probably linguistic Snigurochka.
Well, how is that in English? Santa's granddaughter?
By the way, does he have a granddaughter?
He has deer.
Yeah. What's his name? Rudolf.
Rudolf.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Then elves.
Elves, right? Yeah, but no granddaughters. I guess he's not even married. He has never been married.
Oh, poor guy. Yeah.
He's a virgin.
What?
Well, he is.
Maybe it's kind of one of the requirements of the profession.
Oh, is that like if you want to go to church?
Yes.
If you want to become a Santa Claus?
Do
they actually check?
Well, and she is in the land of snow, in total shock because of the weather. What's going on with the world? It's Landish!
Woohoo!
And I even have an introduction for Daniel, by the way.
You don't have Daniel!
I don't have Daniel, but I have an introduction for him. So anyway, he's somewhere out there, just like the truth Agent Walder spoke about. And hopefully he's out there enjoying the holidays. It is Daniel!
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Doctors are now prescribing books to treat depression. William Nicholson once said, "We read to know that we are not alone." And that sentiment may be more than just a poetic thought. Doctors now are prescribing books to patients with depression, hoping that reading will help them find connections. This kind of so-called bibliotherapy isn't a totally new idea. The word was coined in 1916 by a clergyman named Samuel Crothers. In 1966, the American Library Association began talking about bibliotherapy. Today, they define the word this way: the use of books selected on the basis of content in a planned reading program designed to facilitate the recovery of patients suffering from mental illness or emotional disturbance. Ideally, the process occurs in three phases: personal identification of the reader with a particular character in the recommended book, resulting in psychological catharsis, which leads to rational insight concerning the relevance of the solution suggested in the text to the reader's own experience. Assistance of a trained psychotherapist is advised. In many cases, bibliotherapy is used with children during tough times. Many might remember books for kids about how to handle the death of a pet or a grandparent. But this program in the UK goes above and beyond, hoping that books can aid adults in need as well. And nobody knows what's going to happen with this program and whether it will work. It's easy for a writer to say that reading heals, but only time will tell whether or not books can actually help the depressed.
What do you think about it?
I think that it depends on the book. Maybe it really helps.
I think that it depends on the depression. There should be different books for different kinds of depression. Movies help as well. When you read a book where the character is in a similar situation or maybe worse, and you start identifying yourself with this character, and you see that there is some way out, so you see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's really difficult to separate when a person is having depression, or when it's just, blues, sadness. There is actually a very big difference, and depression can last for many years if not treated properly, while sadness, I think, is just a way of existence. Some people like being sad. They like being moody, things mm-hmm. like that. So there is a difference, and the role of a psychiatrist is probably to identify whether it's depression or not and what kind of depression it is. I think another problem with books is that the patient is probably unwilling to change the situation.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to live, he doesn't want to read anything, he just wants to die mm-hmm. because it's that difficult, yeah? And then you are approaching him with this book, hey, it's a good book for you. It's like, we want to talk about Jesus. You know, it's so difficult to make, to persuade the patient to actually start reading and thinking about what he's reading, you know?
William Wordsworth, or how last names sometimes determine your career. William Wordsworth is a famous poet. Usain Bolt broke the record for the fastest human being. Somewhere out there, a guy named Daniel Snowman authored a book called Pole Positions, the Polar Regions and the Future of the Planet. Daniel Snowman. Coincidence? Science? Think not. According to a study published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, people are more likely to choose careers whose labels resemble their names. The paper explains that people named Denise or Dennis are far more likely to practice dentistry than people with other names. People prefer things that are connected to the self, for example, the letters in one's name. The fancy term for this idea is called nominative determinism, or aptronyms. Even more interesting are the individuals who choose their career paths, which seem to directly contradict their surnames. For example, Dr. Payne or Nicholas Burns Cox. As William Shakespeare once wrote, what's in the name? That which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. Yes, a rose by any other name would smell just the same, but if your last name is Rose, then you might just be the local florist.
I think it's a combination of mm-hmm. different factors, including mm-hmm. name. I mean, it's not only name.
Mm-hmm.
There are several things, including this. I remember when I was a child, I didn't like my name very much, and I wanted to change it. When I became an adult, I wanted to change it. Now I think whether I could change it to some other name, and I just think, no,
mm-hmm.
that new name would not suit me, because, you know, it kind of goes together. And if I change the name, then it would probably be another myself, another me. From this point of view, I think, yeah, names determine your life, your destiny somehow. But it's not just one, it's not just name. So if you give your child some famous name, such as Alexander, doesn't mean that he'll become great. It's just something that determines, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My last name is quite easy for foreigners, because they have this Spanish
mm-hmm.
names, Casanova,
mm-hmm.
and they say it like Vildanova. It's not a problem for them.
Vildanova.
But for Elena's last name, and her last name is Siminovic,
mm-hmm.
and the last two letters are KH,
mm-hmm.
so it was just funny, because we shared the mobile number, mm-hmm. and when somebody was calling her, and I would pick up, hi, can I please speak to Miss Elena Siminovic? So the last four letters were absolutely unpronounceable. I was like, yeah, sure. So Elena was no problem. Siminovic. I know one girl we studied together. Her name, she has a Tatar name, Enje.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always thinking, how does she survive in America with such names? but you know why? I recently found her page on Facebook, and she transformed it into Angie.
Angie?
That's such a perfect twist, yeah?
Yeah, that's right.
So now she's Angie, and it sounds very authentic. I mean, it's close to Andre. And that's what. I always think from this perspective, when I think of names, I always think from the possibility to pronounce the name in English.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because we studied in the linguistic university, but for some people in Tatarstan, life is not easy. Because your name is okay. I mean, your name is not that bad. I mean, in terms of pronunciation, did I tell you that when I was internship in school, I had a student named Zubarjat. Zubarjat. That was unpronounceable. And when I came home and I told my dad that the student with this name, which was absolute, and she was, the thing was that she was the smartest girl in the class. So she was always ready to answer. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't, I had to address her somehow. And without smiling, without bursting, laughing, you know. And when I came home, I told my dad, Dad, there is this girl with such non-pronounceable name. And my dad was like, very beautiful Tatar name. It means something in Tatar. So my dad was like, it's a very beautiful name.
Actually, my mother told me a story. When she was young, before she got married to my dad, she was going out with some very handsome guy, and he was quite rich. And, you know, he was absolutely perfect, except for the name. I don't remember his name, actually. But she said that, well, he proposed her.
So he had ugly first name or last name?
Ugly first name.
So that was not a big problem.
She thought about her children. She thought that, how would my children, because we have this
middle name, yeah.
Middle name, yeah. How would my children live with this name? And she decided to say no.
It's absolutely obvious that names determine your life.
Mm-hmm.
My friend Liz told me a story. Her last name is Isaiva. She told me that it's her mother's last name.
Mm-hmm.
Because when her parents got married, they mutually agreed that the children would receive her mother's last name, especially if they would have girls.
Mm-hmm.
Because the father's last name is Pirigarov.
Well, that's unfortunate.
And they just figured that it wouldn't be very nice for a girl to have this last name.
I don't think so, yeah.
I have a friend, a very talented translator. She works in Kamaz. She also studied together with us, but she's 2 years older. I mean, a very smart girl, but her last name is Vagina. I never thought about her last name in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But once I had to do a project and I needed her last name, her first name. And I was like, how do you spell your name in English? And she was saying that on the phone by letters. Then I didn't understand it. She's like, Vagina! I'm like, oh, okay. I was really sorry for her at that moment.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine such a last name? I mean, in English, in Russian, it sounds okay, but in English, oh my God. I hope she got married, and I don't know, but I hope she got married.
A hedgehog in Cornwall, in England, was taken to the vet because he was so big and round that he couldn't walk or curl up. So people who worked there were puzzled because the huge hedgehog was of normal weight. An x-ray revealed that the animal was indeed inflated. The surgeon, Adam Revitt, said that he had never seen a case of balloon syndrome before. It occurs when bacteria get into a wound and create gas that lifts the skin from the animal. The surgeon used a syringe to slowly deflate the hedgehog. Over about 5 minutes, the animal was given a course of antibiotics and was last known to be recovering nicely.
Yeah, I found the information. So they actually eat everything.
Do they?
According to Wikipedia, yeah. They eat everything, including insects and worms, beetles, caterpillars, earthworms, slugs. It also eats grass snakes, vipers, frogs, fish.
What?
Young birds and birds' eggs.
Oh my God.
Some fruits and mushrooms may supplement the diet.
I thought that they were so cute that they would never harm anybody or anything.
Oh, just like in the cartoons.
They would just eat grass. Yes, apples, and mushrooms, and that's it, like in a cartoon.
You thought that they were cute little animals. That they are monsters. they are quite useful, as I said.
Mm-hmm.
They eat slugs and beetles.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good for the dacha to have a family.
Kill all the slugs.
Yes.
You have an army of hedgehogs. The Bloodbath to Satori, part 2. I have to change the name. Anyway, part 2. Suicide, declared Asya, plain as day. An FBI agent standing beside nodded and wrote something down into his notepad. The murder scene, although not the most brutal in her experience, started to bother the girl. She felt the urge to leave this place as soon as possible. But the moment Asya turned towards the open doors, she heard the familiar voice. "Asya," the voice said, "I wanted to talk to you." Detective Cooper made his way through the dozens of agents examining the place. "Need your opinion on something." "I ain't no Dexter, Detective Cooper. I can't tell you fairy tales by just looking at the blood of this poor bastard," replied Asya. "For my money, this case is closed. Period." Cooper stopped flabbergasted. "Am I hearing it right?" he started. "Aren't you always the one who tries to get to the truth and double-check all the details? Are you running away from the ship with your tail tucked between the legs?" "Oh, lay off me, James. I'm not in the mood." Asya got out of the room and went to the elevators. Lola followed suit. The Japanese-style apartment was located at the top of a skyscraper. The dead man was definitely a member of the rich club. But the successful Japanese businessman, once ambassador, now lay stone-cold in the pool of his own blood in the penthouse, decorated as a typical house from his homeland. "Poor nostalgic bastard," thought Asya. "My God, how pathetic." Lola gave her a judgmental look. "Oh, don't start now. Not you," Asya rolled her eyes. She couldn't wait to get out of this building. "Don't speak ill of the dead. Is that all you've got?" "What's wrong?" was written in the eyes of the spaniel. "Nothing," snapped Asya. James approached her as she was standing waiting for the elevators. "There is definitely something fishy," he said, handing her the files. "Look through them. You have an eye for these things. Otherwise, I wouldn't have asked you." "There are hundreds of PIs and thousands of agents," said Asya. "Can I just once stay in the shadow and say no?" "No," answered Cooper. "Take it." "It was a rhetorical question," muttered Asya, and took the files. To be continued. So, and that's it. I have nothing else.
All right.
Yeah. Do we have anything to...
advertise?
To advertise.
No, except that we can congratulate everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And wish everybody Happy New Year.
Yes.
So, everybody... Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So
all right.
Lots of books and discussions at www.linguistov.ru.